This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're going to be talking about injuries, death caused by medical malpractice. My guest is Jack McGeehee, President-elect of the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which is an American Bar Association accredited organization. It's also approved by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Mr. McGeehee is a certified specialist in civil trial law practice. Before establishing his firm in Houston, Texas, Mr. McGeehee was a lead medical malpractice attorney with the Pentagon in Washington, D.C., and represented the United States in medical malpractice cases filed against Army doctors and hospitals. In his practice today, he focuses on brain damage, and we'll get to Mr. McGeehee in just a minute. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, which certifies 11 fields of law. Additional funding for this program is made possible by the Family Law Section of the State Bar and the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco. Jack, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Mr. Finney.
Jack, you can call me Chuck. Goodness.
I will. Thank you, Chuck.
Goodness. Thank you very much. It's very nice to have you here. Would you very briefly tell us what the National Board of Trial Advocacy is and what the certifications are?
Yes. It's very similar to the board certifications that we're familiar with doctors. It's the national board that certifies lawyers in civil, family, criminal, and pretrial practice. And it requires them to take an exam. It requires them to many times take an oral exam and satisfy a large number of experience criteria that makes the board certification very meaningful to the public. And the public can be pretty comfortable if they get a nationally or state board-certified lawyer to represent them.
And as I understand it, Jack, the organization has members throughout the United States.
They do. And many of your lawyers who are board certified in California are also board certified by the national board.
Jack, you've spent most of your career doing medical malpractice. When you were an employee of the Pentagon, you were doing, as I understand it, essentially all defense practice.
Correct.
And now you're doing all plaintiff's work.
Yes, I represent brain damaged children.
How common is medical malpractice?
That's a very scary question. They did a study, Harvard Medical School did a study in Beth Israel Hospital 10 years ago and took the numbers of preventable deaths from malpractice and extrapolated it throughout the United States and published that each year there are 92,000 deaths caused by medical malpractice that are preventable. That means that there will be 17 during this program.
Ooh.
And you compare that with 58,000 people were killed in Vietnam, 43,000 a year die in car accidents, and 15,000 by guns. You can see that's a pretty healthy number.
That's incredible. Jack, with all of your experience, you've been a lawyer how long, roughly?
30 years.
30 years. You started, I presume, your initial job was with the Pentagon, or am I wrong?
No, I started much like you did, Chuck, as a criminal prosecutor.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
And then you went to the Pentagon, is that right?
Yes.
What do you believe, where are the problems here? What's going on? What can people do, if anything, in your opinion, with all of the experience you've had, both on the defense as well as the plaintiff side, to try to improve their situation and reduce the potential for medical malpractice? Do you believe there's anything they can do?
They absolutely can. I think the normal average person, the you and me of the world, just needs to ask questions and ask questions and ask questions, and not only that, but demand answers.
Mm-hmm.
If the answer doesn't make sense, don't stop there. Keep asking the question, and if at the end the answer doesn't make sense, get somebody else involved who says that answer makes sense.
If a doctor or a nurse or the medical person with whom you as the patient are dealing kind of ignores you or kind of dodges your questions or is offended by questions, what recommendation do you have for that person?
Well, they talk about the squeaky wheel. Unfortunately, if you sit and are obedient, and I hate to say this, but in the Army, they teach respect for authority. If you have such respect for authority that you're timid in asking the questions where no one gives you an answer, you need to be a squeaky wheel, and you need to stand up, and you need to make yourself heard. And if you do that, they're going to pay attention to you.
What preparation, if someone is facing an operation, what preparation would you say that that person should make in terms of in getting together with the doctor or other medical professionals?
You know, most of the docs, Chuck, are really good, caring people. And those aren't the ones that I'm worried about. I'm worried about the ones, the 30 to 40,000 a year out of the 615,000 in the United States who are impaired and who have drug problems and alcohol problems. I think if your spouse can't understand the answers that are being given by the doctor, there are patient advocates out there who do, but the chances are real good that in a hospital system, you can latch on to one nurse or tech or person there that can actually serve as your advocate if
really?
You just ask the right questions.
That's very interesting. That's very interesting. How do you determine if it's possible, if a doctor has a drug problem or a drinking problem or something like that and obviously is trying to hide it, is there any way that you believe, with all of your experience, that the average layperson can try to do some kind of research and find out whether or not this doctor is reliable? Or, I mean, for example, if a business is ripping off people, a lot of consumers will file complaints with the Better Business Bureau. What is there available for potential for people who may be undergoing or about to undergo an operation to determine whether or not the surgeon is really competent?
Chuck, you get on the internet and you can find blogs all over the place, and invariably blogs are going to speak ill of your surgeon.
Uh-huh.
Those are worthless. And the only thing that's really useful is incident reports and things that are filed by the hospitals to the National Practitioners Data Bank. And the problem with that whole system is that's a secret system. The only people who have access to the National Practitioners Data Bank are other hospitals who consult it when they hire doctors. The average person can't find out whether their surgeon killed the last five people undergoing the same procedure or has never had an untoward event in his entire life.
With all of your experience today and background, can you, as a specialist in your field, can you access the National Practitioners Data Bank?
I can't, and I don't know of a single individual who can.
Is this something that Congress needs to work on?
Yes, this is something we need to write our legislatures about.
Oh, my. Who's behind the National Practitioners Data Bank? Who are these people, anyway?
Well, it's no surprise that the Hospital Association is behind it, and Medical Association is not really that in favor of it, but the Hospital Association is behind it, and the insurance companies are behind it.
Incredible. How much does medical malpractice cost us?
That's a good question. There's lots of reports about how expensive medical malpractice is in our system. And the doctors and the hospital association in Texas got together and conducted a study. And they concluded, with several other studies that have been conducted throughout the United States, they concluded that one-half of 1% of the healthcare money goes towards paying for medical malpractice, goes for paying defense lawyers, plaintiffs' lawyers, and expenses. One half of 1% of the healthcare dollar. In other words, it's infinitesimal. In other words, it's statistically insignificant what medical malpractice does financially to our system.
Say that again. You said it's
statistically insignificant.
What does that? What do you mean by that?
It makes one half of 1% of a difference, and that expense is not worth doing anything to try to eliminate.
Oh,
medical
really?
Malpractice in our system does more good than bad.
Really? Well, what are we talking about? What kind of money? What kind of money is 0.5%?
Yes, medical malpractice lawsuits, I meant to say. Medical malpractice lawsuits, in other words, people who are pursuing their rights under the medical malpractice laws do more good than bad.
I got you. Okay, I misunderstood what you were saying. All right. Let's take a very brief break. All right, it is our Call a Lawyer night. I'm looking for some of the lawyers. Where are they? Have they shown up here? Okay, 1-800-525-9917 if you'd like to call in and speak to any one or more of the lawyers here in workers' compensation, criminal law, family law, immigration law, legal malpractice law, landlord-tenant law, estate planning, tax law, real estate, and tomorrow, in the second half hour of the program, I'll give you the phone number for our certified specialist in bankruptcy law. Again, if you'd like to talk to any of our attorneys off the air for Call a Lawyer, 1-800-525-9917. And what I'd like to let you know, in the second half hour of the program, I will be giving you the local phone number, and you can talk to my guest, Jack McGee. My guest is Jack McGee. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're talking about medical malpractice. If you joined us a little bit late, Jack McGee is the president-elect of a very important organization, which I hope that you will try to look into if you need a certified specialist, the National Board of Trial Advocacy, which is a national organization. I had the current president on back in October, and Jack is the president-elect. Jack, are there a lot of medical malpractice frivolous lawsuits?
The myth is that there are, but the studies show that of these, they're called iatrogenic injuries, Chuck, the injuries that are caused by a doctor that are totally preventable and unnecessary. The studies show that of all of them, 2% of those ever get into the claim stage, and half of those ever get into the courtroom. So less than 1% of all the doctor mistakes ever get into our civil justice system.
Well, that means because I presume the great majority of them are settled. Am I wrong or not?
No, I'm talking about that 1% includes all those that are settled.
I see.
The other 99% go without any claims being filed at all.
Really?
They are brushed under the table.
Oh, wow. Is that because injured patients don't know what to do, or they feel that there's just no hope for them, or what?
Maybe all those things.
Really?
And the interesting part is the biggest deterrent to a medical malpractice lawsuit is good bedside manner to a doctor,
mm-hmm.
by a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got one of those cases that fall into that 1%, chances are good that your doctor didn't have good bedside manner, and the biggest reason you want to sue him is because he was a jerk to you or not polite to you.
Very interesting.
Not because he did something professionally improper.
In light of the statistic you have just given us a couple of minutes ago, I take it that medical malpractice cases are not clogging our courthouses throughout the country, or am I wrong?
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, you'll appreciate this. 49% of the cases in California are criminal cases.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. That less than 1% of the cases in California are medical malpractice cases.
Really? Okay. All right. Do you believe today practice defensive medicine?
You know what? I bet they do, Chuck. And if my daughter goes to the hospital and she needs emergency medical care, I want them to practice defensive medicine on her. I think defensive medicine saves lives.
What do you believe? Can you tell us what defensive medicine really is? Can you
Sure.
give us a kind of a definition of what it means?
It's when doctors are afraid to ignore patients. Then they practice defensive medicine. I think that's a good thing.
Which means they are being more careful than they might be otherwise. Is that basically it?
Yes, and if it takes a lawsuit hanging over their head to be afraid, good.
not that you're biased, huh, Jack?
Not at all. I represent these kids with passion.
Well, this is wonderful. That's what it takes. It takes passion, frankly, I think, to do what you are doing. What's going wrong? Your specialty now is brain damage of young children. What is going on here?
Well, Lots of things, Chuck, and most of it is busy doctors. They're trying to make money. There's nothing wrong with that. They're understaffed, and corporations now are taking over the healthcare system, and corporations are buying up contracts with hospitals, and corporations are cutting back the staff, cutting back the nurses, and sometimes the doctors are put in impossible situations.
How does that though lead to brain damage? What's going on?
A case that we have going on right now, they intubated a neonate, a little baby that couldn't breathe, and they put the endotracheal tube instead of down the trachea, they put it down the esophagus, and they started pumping air into this little baby's stomach instead of her lungs, and she basically was suffocated for 2.5 hours, and her brain now is destroyed, and all of her other organs are healthy, and she'll live a normal life expectancy with no brain function.
Oh, that's dreadful. And how old is this child?
She was 1.5 years old.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. Now, is that case over, Jack, at this point?
No, but there's 5 or 6 cases just like that I've done in my career. And some involve failure to diagnose infections. Some involve meningitis that goes undiagnosed. We had a pregnant lady with twins go into a hospital a year or so ago and in labor, and they gave her 3 Vicodin and sent her home. It's because it's busy, and she went home and delivered her twins on the bathroom floor.
Oh, my.
It's a busy system that is controlled by the insurance lobby and is filled with people who are well-meaning but are in a system that's being taken over by the corporate giant.
Did that woman who was about to have the babies and did back on her bathroom floor, did she have an advocate with her when she was in the hospital?
She did not. She was shushed out of the hospital pretty quickly because she didn't have insurance.
Oh, I see. Well, that's terrible. That's outrageous. Is there something that she, or if she had had an advocate with her, could have done so that they wouldn't have thrown her out of the hospital?
Yes, I think the more, if she would have been that squeaky wheel, and if she would have latched on to that nurse, there was a nurse in that whole system that knew what was going on and felt bad about it, but if she had latched on to that nurse would have been her advocate.
So what you need, pardon me, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I know where you're going. Yeah, you do. You need an advocate, either yourself, your spouse, your friend who's with you, and or somebody in the hospital staff that you've taken a liking to and you trust.
So in other words, the idea is you as the patient, want to try to make friends with the hospital's members of the hospital staff, the doctor if possibly you can, so that you have people who feel good about you.
Yes, and we get back to that, ask questions and demand answers so they make sense to you, and there's somebody in the system that's going to do that for you.
You know, Jack, there was not too many years ago a crazy case where there was a burglar who burgled a place, and he fell through the skylight and then brought a lawsuit, and he actually won. This is kind of off the mark, but I wonder if you would comment about that.
Yeah, that burglar, that self-righteous burglar fell through a skylight and sued and got $2.5 million, and that's all you saw, those headlines. And we went in and found out the details. Turns out it was in a school district in New York, and the school district painted the roof white, painted the skylights on top of the roof white. An employee fell into a skylight, cracked it, and the court said, you shall remove the white paint from those skylights so everybody can see that it's a skylight, not the roof. Well, 2 months later, the high school basketball team was practicing basketball, and it became 6 o'clock at night, and the light for the basketball court burned out. And they asked the student to go in and get another light for the basketball court that was outdoors. And the student said, sure, and he climbed up, and he burglarized the school by breaking in, and as he was walking across the roof, he fell through the skylight, and he landed on his head, and he became permanently paralyzed for the rest of his life.
This is the case that was so highly publicized going back a few years ago?
Yes, it was.
I see. So this high school student who was doing something worthwhile, they referred to him as a burglar. That's incredible.
Yes, and I was incensed also, and I was incensed because he only got $2.5 million.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that certainly doesn't seem enough. Jack, let's take another very brief break.
Okay.
This is your Legal Rights, and it's our Call a Lawyer night. We have a number of attorneys here. Martin, has everybody shown up tonight? Everybody's here. Okay. I will let you know in the second half hour of the program who these wonderful people are who are very gracious in terms of their time. If you'd like to talk with them off the air with regard to a legal problem you may have, it's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. In about 9 minutes or so, I will give you our local phone number. You can call in and talk with Jack McGeehee about medical malpractice. And so please be patient, and you'll be able to join us for that. Jack, one of the things that I thought was so fascinating about preparing for this program to have you as my guest, in your on the internet with regard to your firm and you, this is a quote from your statement in your firm, and it's, your goal in life is to die penniless. Would you tell us what that means and why?
Yeah, and
most people would wonder, why in the world is this attorney talking like this? They all want to ride in Mercedes Benzes and Jaguars and et cetera, but tell us if you would.
Well, much to the chagrin of my kids who have their education paid for, you come upon a time in life when you look around you and you say, okay, I got enough stuff. It's time to do something to make a difference. And I had that awakening on a trip to Africa when I went to Rwanda and talked to an archbishop who single-handedly caused the rebels to put up their arms and stop shooting each other. And it was a life-changing experience, and now I just feel like there's important callings out there, and after so many years not hearing those, I finally heard them, and now I want to put my monetary bounty from the practice of law into something that means something, and I think all of us do that on some level. And I just got hit pretty hard when I heard that calling.
Well, that's very impressive. I'm very impressed to hear you say that. We have in California a cap on emotional and personal injuries of $250,000. Are
yes.
you still there, Jack? Okay.
Yes.
A lot of people think that that should be changed. I hear a kind of like an echo that's going on. Do you hear that, Jack?
Yeah, I do, but it's okay.
Okay, all right. What is your thought about limiting the amount let's say, pain and suffering? What thoughts do you have about that?
Yeah, that protects the doctors. It certainly protects the insurance lobby, which was behind the caps on damages. Your cap on damages in California was passed in 1975, and it was not attached to a COLA, a cost of living increase.
Yes.
That $250,000 back in 1975 equals $58,000 today. Had there been a COLA increase, that cap on damages today would be $1.2 million.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What that means is that it hurts the people that need it the most. The people who go through a fiery death, who fall out of an airplane, who linger in an undiagnosed infective state for years, are the ones who need those kind of damages the most, and those are the ones that are hurt most by the cap. So the only thing that you can do is then sue for economic loss. Well, the rich guys are the ones that have the best economic loss. The doctors that make a lot of money are the ones who have the best economic loss. And the women and children who don't make as much mm-hmm. are the ones that are truly victimized by a cap. A one-size-fits-all doesn't work.
We also have, I think in California, and I know you've done some research about this, we also have a cap on attorney's fees in California, do we not?
You do, and it's interesting. You have a cap on plaintiff's attorney's fees.
Yes.
You have a cap on the attorney who represents the brain damaged baby. You have no cap on the defense lawyer's fees, who make more money the more paper they generate. And there's good defense lawyers out there. I don't mean to pick on the defense lawyers, but there is no cap in California on their fees. So what that means, if lawyers have to make money and now their fees are capped, that means they can only take the most egregious cases in California. In other words, they can't take the failure to diagnose an appendicitis.
Yes.
They can't take a death of a baby. The death of a baby has no economic loss to a family. Mm-hmm. It's all capped non-economic loss. So when you put the attorney's fees cap in place, what you do is you padlock the courthouse doors to a whole group of people whose claim isn't big enough to justify an attorney taking the case. That's not the way to solve the problem.
Do you see, with your experience and your organization, do you see that, I mean, California is not the only state that has this kind of cap situation, is it?
New York has the same thing.
Do you see through perhaps your organization, the National Board of Trial Advocacy, do you see with your membership throughout the United States that something like this will start to put pressure on members of the legislatures, or do you think that this is in cement?
The most persuasive things to legislators are your listeners,
yes.
not the lawyers.
Right.
The lawyers, they say they've got a dog in the hunt, but the people, if the people ever get it and realize that they can't get it, you can't get a lawyer in California to take a death of a child case mm-hmm. because of the cap on attorney's fees and the cap on damages. And that's sad. The people need to get it and understand it. And when they do, that's the best way to affect change.
So in other words, what you're saying is that we as the public need to put pressure on our members of the legislature.
Absolutely.
Yeah. One very brief thing before we end the statewide version of the program. The U.S. Senate back in 2012 did a hearing which found that 1 in 7 Medicare beneficiaries are harmed during their care. Do you agree with that?
I do, and that's a sad commentary.
It's their care by the medical establishment?
Yeah, and some docs, and not most, not a large majority of docs, but some docs do a walletectomy.
What is that? Wait a minute, a walletectomy, what's that mean?
They want to know whether the insurance is going to pay, and they want to know if you're a Medicare patient where the insurance isn't going to pay as much as private insurance. And if your walletectomy turns out to be benign, you're not going to get good care.
I see. Well, that's a very unfortunate situation. We are going to end the statewide version now, but we'll continue live on the Internet, and we'll continue live in the Bay Area. It is just about 7:29 at 91.7 KLW in San Francisco, your local public radio station. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. I have the pleasure of having Jack McGeehy, who is the president-elect of the National Board of Trial Advocacy, with me on the program. We're talking about medical malpractice. If you have a question, a comment, a concern, would like to talk with Mr. McGeehy, the number is 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. If you would like to talk with any one of our Call a Lawyer lawyers, who I'm going to name right now, that's 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. Let me tell you who we have here. For workers' compensation law, certified specialist Alice O'Sullivan, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Criminal law, Jeff Hayden, certified specialist. Family law, Janet Lee Frankel, a certified specialist. Immigration law, Donald Shepard, who's a certified specialist. Legal malpractice law, Peter Fortune, a certified specialist. Estate planning, Catherine Ray Wong, a certified specialist. Landlord-tenant law, Daniel Wayne. Tax law, real estate, Frank Adam. And tomorrow, if you are being chased by creditors and your life is a shambles because they just won't leave you alone, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be available from 8 until noon. That's tomorrow, Thursday, April 24th. Here's his number. Please, if you have a problem, he's very generous with his time. 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call and the line is busy, but you can leave a message, leave your name and phone number, let him know you listen to the program and you'd like him to call you back, and he will. So again, call a lawyer, 1-800-525-9917. If you want to talk to Jack McGehee on the program, 1-415-841-4134. All right, let's do this. Let's talk with Mark. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi there.
Hi.
I just have a question. How long is the waiting period? I've heard that I've heard that to sue a doctor or a surgeon who's, you know, screwed up and had a malpractice, that you only get about a year in California from the date of your surgery. Is that correct, or is that only for certain kind of surgeries and things?
Do you know, Jack? I don't.
I'm afraid to talk. No, Mark, I'm sorry. I'm a Texas lawyer, and I know in Texas it's 2 years, and I just don't know what it is in California.
Okay. Well, I guess I just want to say to people out there, I have a friend. She had a hip surgery, and it was like a year and a month later. She moved to Hawaii, and she had to go on disability and stuff. And the surgeon she saw about it actually said, you know, you need to go call a lawyer right away.
Yes.
And as it turned out, she was told no, because in California, you only have a year, and it's too late.
So it was too late. And when did this occur? How long ago?
Oh, I'd say 4 months.
4 months ago. And
yeah.
And did she confer, Mark, though, with a California lawyer, do you know?
Yes.
She did?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I this is not an area that I practice in, and so I don't know. My concern about this would be that if she had only discovered this and didn't know that there was this problem, a whole year before, there may be an issue on discovery. And my suggestion is...
I totally agree with you, and you would think so, but, I mean, it was sort of an ironclad thing that she... Mm. And it's so crazy because you're told during that first year, oh, you'll get better, you'll get better, the pain will be less. Because she had her hip replaced, and what he did was something apparently very straightforwardly stupid, which was he cut a nerve which caused her to have what's called foot drop.
And oh, boy.
She's older, and she kept crashing and falling, and then now she had a walker.
Let me make a suggestion here, Mark. The National Board of Trial Advocacy has members, specialists in certainly civil trial practice throughout the United States. There are some specialists certified by the National Board of Trial Advocacy, Jack, in California, are there not?
There's many, yes.
What website can Mark's friend go to, or can Mark go to try to perhaps put his friend together and try to get another attorney opinion?
Yeah, if you go to the National Board of Trial Advocacy website, the NBTA.com, there's a way that you can go through to find a lawyer in your state.
All right, NBTA.com.
Yeah.
My suggestion, Mark, is at this point, since this is still not that far away, that I think this is something you might want to do, and then get in touch with your friend. Is she still in Hawaii?
Yeah. She is.
Well, so. good luck to you. But again, it's in NBTA, National Board of Trial Advocacy.com. And see if you can find something.
Hey, thanks so much, and I love your show. I think it's a great source for everybody, and
Well, Mark, I'm a great believer in prevention of problems and self-help, and that's why I developed this program 31 years ago. So thank you very much for calling. Glad you could.
I'm a big fan. My wife was very angry that I called because she.
Why?
She couldn't hear the show.
Oh, I love it. Well, tell your wife I'm sorry that you did that.
Okay.
That she's got to discipline you for that. Okay, take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for calling. All right, call a lawyer, 1-800-525-9917. If you want to talk to Jack McGeehee, 1-415-841-4134. And by the way, for anyone who's listening to the program anywhere in the United States on the Internet, if you're listening to it through www.kalw.org, you can call 1-415-841-4134 to speak to Jack McGeehee, or, of course, call the 1-800-525-9917 to speak with any one of our Call a Lawyer lawyers. For those of you who have tuned in perhaps a little bit late, this is Your Legal Rights. My guest is Jack McGeehee. He is a certified specialist in civil trial practice. He is the president-elect of the National Board of Trial Advocacy. He specializes in child brain damage. He has been an attorney for 30 years, and it's a great pleasure to have him on to talk about medical malpractice. So, Alex, welcome to the program.
Hi, Chuck and Jack. Let me ask you, let me state, I'm going to get knee surgery, a knee replacement, in fact, in June. So what, if it was you, Jack, what would you do to prepare for that as far as making sure that that this has been done before in the past correctly, blah, blah, blah?
Yeah, Alex, I would talk to the they call them gatekeepers in the insurance industry. I would talk to your closest doctor, no matter whether he's family practice, cardiologist, or whatever, and ask that doc to give you a recommendation. And then when they give you a recommendation, just make sure that doc is board certified and he's got privileges at reputable hospitals.
Okay, so no, there's no checking, like you talked about, that the data bank. There's nothing like that as far as a Yelp type of a thing that that's trustable?
No, and Alex, I would be real careful about those Yelp blogs, because you're going to get the best docs out there having terrible, terrible things said about them by people that have anecdotal, questionable experience. So I would put zero credibility in those kinds of things.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. But what I'm asking, like, basically, and I agree with what you said, and I appreciate what you said. Thank you. But is there like something that the hospital even reports about, like, you know, if I talk to them directly, aren't they responsible to tell me the truth as far as how many people have had adverse reactions to their knee replacements or that sort of thing? No?
I'm sorry, but that answer is no. And that's a real problem that I have with our entire system.
Yeah.
That national practitioner data bank needs to be busted open and made available to you and me.
Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. And then one last thing. Do dentists... are they under your purview also?
Yes. We had a dental case involving a brain-damaged child also.
Yeah, because I found a lot of dentists, not the majority, of course, but a good percentage of them are more concerned about money than they are your dental health.
Yeah, and that's fine. Let's just follow the rules, though, while you're making that money.
Oh, my. Yeah, that's very distressing. Okay,
yeah.
Alex,
hey,
thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for calling. Here's a question that came into the studio written down for me. The downside of, quote, defensive, end quotes, medicine, it becomes the excuse for doctors and the medical establishment to use the most expensive medical procedures and medications when less expensive procedures would produce the same result. The situation drives up the cost of medical care. Comment, question mark. What do you think about that?
I think the defensive medicine tests that are ordered are many times ordered by doctors who own the labs.
Ah.
And doctors who own the big machines that you're going to get scanned with, and doctors who make money when they send you across the street and get your picture taken by a radiographic machine. And I think we got to get doctors' conflict of interest either made visible to all of us,
mm-hmm.
or get them out of the system.
Very interesting.
I think that drives up the cost under the guise of defensive medicine.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Very a great concern, frankly. All right, Ruth Ann, welcome to the program. Ruth Ann, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can now. Go ahead.
Hi there. I was wondering, this may be a little bit off topic, but not really, because it was mentioned earlier. You mentioned that people should be more concerned if they have Medicare for insurance than other insurances. I do have Medicare, not as a senior, but as a person with a disability. I was under the impression it was better than most, because doctors are very willing to take it for in outpatient office visits because, you know, compared to like Medi-Cal, it pays way more. Is one, meaning me, it's substantially more at risk for like a surgery? For is the payments that doctors and surgeons get from Medicare less than, say, employer insurances or Kaiser or other insurance companies?
Ruth Ann, my dad's Medicare also. And my dad, right now, he's in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, and he gets Cadillac care. He gets wonderful care because he's surrounded by healthcare practitioners who actually love him. I wouldn't be afraid, if I were you, being subject to the unpopularity, if there is any, for Medicare. I would
I
not
think
let that
there
concern.
Was.
I wouldn't let that concern you at all. If we're talking dollars, we're talking percentages of less payment compared to other plans. If you get a person who's that concerned about percentages, that person's going to be a bad apple no matter what system they're under.
Thank you very, very much.
Okay, Ruth Ann.
Thanks a lot.
Glad you called. Take care now. All right, our number 1-415-841-4134. If you have questions about medical malpractice, if you have questions about procedures that you're concerned about, and you would like to get the response of a very experienced medical malpractice attorney, both in his earlier career, a former prosecutor, then became a defense attorney. Employed by the Pentagon, representing Army doctors and hospitals in medical malpractice cases, and now specializes representing only plaintiffs in child brain malpractice cases, Jack McGehee. So if you would like to talk with him, the number is 1-415-841-4134. If you have questions in other areas of the law, we have our Call a Lawyer Night, 1-800-525-9917. So don't be bashful and don't wait until, let's say, 15 minutes from now, because if you do, we're gone. That's the problem with this. We can only stay on the air for so long before they pull the plug. Jack, what have we not touched upon before we take another call? What have we not touched upon that you wanted to make sure that we did talk about in this program?
I think we haven't touched about who's behind all this tort reform and all these laws changing medical malpractice and making doctors above the law.
Let's talk about that, please.
The person behind the green curtain is the insurance lobby.
I see.
And they lobbied California to pass your MICRA Act, the Medical Injury Compensation Reform Act, and they said it's because their premiums would go lower and lower and lower if you would cap damages and cap attorney's fees.
But they haven't, have they?
Well, guess what? In the 10 years following MICRA, insurance premiums went up 450% in California. They went up 27% the year, 10 years later, when your Supreme Court affirmed the cap on damages. Claims paid throughout the United States, claims paid by insurance companies in medical malpractice, average 36 cents per each dollar of premium taken in.
Wow.
Compare that to car insurance, is 62 cents go out for each dollar of premium that comes in. The man behind the green curtain in the medical malpractice crisis is the insurance lobby.
Okay. Well, that's something that we all need to be very cognizant about in terms of being more active in playing a role in terms of dealing with the legislators in our geographic areas, it would seem to me.
We shouldn't let the insurance folks push us around.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. Okay, we have a different Mark this time. Mark, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you. My issue is having been given wrong medication by a pharmacy, and it was a pretty radical mistake whereby they were supposed to give me something for a skin issue, Lamisil, and instead was given Lamictal, which is for seizures and bipolar disorder. And I only discovered this by coincidence 3.5 months after the fact. And, I'm just kind of curious about the liability of pharmacies. It was the pharmacy who made the mistake, not the doctor.
The doctor did the correct referral or correct request for the prescription for you, but the pharmacy misunderstood and filled the wrong thing.
Exactly.
Is that right? What has it done to you, Mark?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that it's done a whole lot. I'm off of it, and there were, some issues with coordination and tightness of my jaw and a little bit of dazed feeling. But it's more the issue of, how this might affect me in the future. Take something that's procedures.
Let me stop you for a moment because I want to have. I'd like to have Jack McGehee respond to your concern here. What thoughts do you have for him, Jack?
Yeah, Mark. Let me go off a little bit. I think ranking above the culprits in our whole system is the pharmaceutical industry. They're making tons and tons of money. But if we get your situation and discuss pharmacies that disperse the pharmaceuticals, I think the pharmacies are so computerized, they need to know exactly when they give the wrong medicine. They need to know when combination of medicines are erroneous. They need to know when too much medicine is erroneous. Unfortunately, for your situation, and I won't say unfortunately, it's probably a good tenet, but there's an underlying tenet in medical malpractice that basically says, no harm, no foul.
Mm.
And if you haven't been harmed by the foul, then there's really not much redress that you can pursue, especially because we've got all these caps out there that are going to eliminate the low dollar amount cases.
Right. Well, that's what I've, gathered, but it's, kind of questioning how does one know for sure one has not been harmed.
Let me throw something else out, though, that we haven't discussed much. There are state boards that oversee, that permit grievances to be filed by aggrieved people that don't have a remedy that can go into the civil justice system. And I would, if I were you, to help people downstream from you, I would do two things. I would, number one, certainly notify the pharmacy in writing that they made a huge mistake. And if they don't do anything, I would notify your state board that they made a huge mistake. And they might do something.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck to you, Mark. Thank you very much for calling. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in California, every county has a bar association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. You should get a human being to speak with. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to try to find someone who's experienced, an experienced attorney for you for a half an hour consultation. And with minor exception, throughout the state of California, a half an hour consultation will cost you anywhere for half an hour, $25 to $35. It's a great way to get some basic information. For those of you who are interested, again, with respect to the National Board of Trial Advocacy, that website is www.n, as in national, B for board, T for trial, A for advocacy.com, nbta.com. And correct me if I'm wrong on this, if you would, Jack. My understanding also was the National Board of Trial Advocacy also certified Social Security Disability Advocacy. Is that correct or am I wrong?
You're right, and I forgot to mention
okay.
that.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm glad. So what we have is civil trial law, criminal trial law, family trial law, and Social Security Disability Advocacy law. Also, what I want you all to know about is both the website and the statewide number for the California Board of Legal Specialization. If you want to get pamphlets or you want to find out who the certified specialists in any one of the 11 certified specialties in California, try to find out who they are in your area should you want them. The statewide number is 415-538-2100. 415-538-2100. And if you go to the State Bar's website, www.calbar.ca.gov, www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to Legal Specialists, you'll find out who the specialists are in your area. So that gives you something to go with. And let me see. We have Elaine. Welcome to the program. Elaine, are you there? Did we lose Elaine? I guess we made her unconscious. Who knows? Jack will hopefully have someone else to take her place. Here's something, though, a question that was brought in to me. Late night TV is flooded with ads by legal consortiums which urge victims of malpractice to call their 800 number. What do you think of that? Is that a good idea?
Actually, that touches on two topics. The legal consortiums send their cases to the lawyers who pay them the most money. Those lawyers aren't board certified necessarily. Sometimes they are.
Yeah.
But the best way to find out if you have a qualified lawyer is if they're California board certified or nationally board certified.
Okay.
The other thing that touches on is there's other organizations out there that claim their lawyers are super lawyers.
No.
Or their lawyers are the best in California. Or their lawyers are the best in the country. None of those organizations give tests, interview, give written exams, give oral exams, and have qualification criteria to gain their title.
Certainly, I know that the California Board of Legal Specialization, before one can have the designation of certified specialist, requires a number of things, including taking an additional exam, having practiced for a number of years in that particular area of the law, and have the support of people who know what you're doing and can verify that you are someone who should have the right to become a certified specialist. What is it that your organization does to make sure that these people, before they are certified specialists, qualify?
It is a royal pain in the kazunga to apply to our organization. You have to have a large number of jury trials. You have to have a large number of briefs. You have to have a large number of hearings that you've attended. Same for California. If you are board, if you get the privilege of putting on your letterhead board certified in California or by the national board certifying organization, you can take that to the bank.
Could you spell kazunga for us?
that's a medical legal term.
That's wonderful. I love that. That's just beautiful. Okay, we're going to have somebody else. All right, here we go. We've got Jean. Welcome to the program, Jean.
Good evening.
Hi.
Hi. I have a daughter that is in her early 40s. She's a colitis Crohn's patient for more than 2 decades of her life. In the last 5 years, 5 years ago, she underwent a colostomy surgery. Mm. So she's lost her entire large intestine. Mm. It was a robotic surgery performed at UC Hospital. Within the first 4 to 6 months, she went back on a number of occasions while she was healing and saying, "I'm in horrific pain." The doctor repeatedly sent her to pain management, said there's no problem. Well, here we are 5 years later, and she suffers every day. She says it's like being stabbed constantly in her abdomen. She's got the advice of a few other doctors that she's seen. Only one or two have been willing to speak to her about this and say, no, this is a surgical issue and it can be fixed. One doctor initially, this was about a year and a half ago, said, I can definitely fix this. And then when he contacted the doctor that did the surgery, it was like the curtain went down, and he refused to speak to her anymore and said, no, I don't think actually I can do this. And so I wonder, with regard to statute of limitations, with regard to discovery, she doesn't really want to sue anyone. She simply wants this fixed. She's a Medi-Cal patient. She has 2 children she's trying to raise. And the worst of this too is after this, she was cut off of her her benefits all this time that she was, you know, ill for years. Once they did
Jean, what benefits was she cut off from?
She was collecting Social Security benefits.
And they cut her off from Social Security?
Once she had surgery, they considered her cured.
Wow.
So, it's a terrible mess. And they even tried to put her on OxyContin.
Let me stop you at this point. Has your daughter looked into getting an attorney to help her at all?
We have tried. There are a couple of people that we tried through the bar who said, you know, they won't even take a case like this.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what to do. And I just, you know, she's suffering every day. She doesn't want to, at times, she doesn't want to live.
Where does she live? What city?
She lives in Vacaville now. Yeah. I'm in San Francisco.
Yeah.
So it's a doctor that is still practicing at UC Hospital.
I see.
Okay. And as I say, she's shown this ostomy to a number of doctors, and they said, "Oh no, this is completely raw, and it's a mess. It's a mess."
Let me get Jack to respond. Right. Obviously, we can't solve the problem on this radio program. But Jack, do you have some suggestions for Jean and her daughter?
Yeah, and this is the second time statute of limitations has come up, and Dr. Steve Barnes on my staff just texted me that said, in California, the statute is 1 year, plus you have a discovery rule out there of up to 3 years. That means if you are unable to discover the facts surrounding the negligence, there's a discovery rule in California that gives you a leeway up to 3 years. It's a lot more complicated than that, but that's the general tenor of the law. So if you're within any of those parameters, there's still something to do. But Gene, I would, this is a sad example of the one size fits all and the inability for lawyers to make money on cases like this, because your legislature has said your daughter is not worth anything except her pecuniary loss from her surgery. And that's horrible. That is a miscarriage of justice, and it's in most of our states now. We have the same thing in Texas. And so basically somebody looks at this and says, your daughter is not earning six figures a year, and this pain that she's in, she could still probably do a computer job. And therefore, the case is not something that most practitioners can afford to take. The doctors who are afraid to get involved really aggravate me, because usually they're afraid to get involved because of an overtone of medical malpractice. And that's not defensive medicine. That's a fear of the insurance companies cutting them off if they get sued or if they get involved in medical malpractice issues.
Let me stop both of you, because we have run out of time at this point. But what I want to mention, Jack, we have a number of people who want to talk to you. I think what I'm going to have to do is, in a few months, if you have time and would like to, I'll invite you to come back on the program and we'll talk about this, because all of a sudden, interestingly enough, about 5 minutes ago, all of the lines lit up, which is very interesting. We have come to the end of the program. Jack McGeehee, I want to thank you very much for joining us and being with us with this incredible information you've given us. I hope you enjoyed it.
I'm honored to have been a part of it.
Jack McGeehee is president-elect of the National Board of Trial Advocacy, and I look forward to having you back on the program, Jack. Thanks so much. All right, everybody, let me just mention to you that your Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, by the Trust and Estate section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. Next week, if you are wondering what you should do to protect your family members financially, we're going to be talking about basic estate planning issues. My guests are certified specialists in estate planning, trust, and probate law, Daniel Brown and James Efting. Thank you very much for joining us for Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney.
Thank you.